Hello and welcome to episode 219 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you as usual in different locations. I'm in Boulevard Park, Washington, home of the Pelton Cast.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of your Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
Well, another long week in a long year. So,
possibly the longest week.
We're going to start by talking about the beer we have this week, which for the third consecutive week comes from our friends at Fremont Brewing. This is the Night Flying IPA, also one of their kind of one-off beers that they're doing right now during quarantine.
Tell me about this beer.
All right, I have to go back and find the page again.
Down and dirty.
Night Flying IPA evokes easy living island days with notes and flavors of coconut, pineapple, and tropical fruits. It's the vacation you want to have, but just can't take right now. We travel not to escape life, but for life to not escape us.
Wow. Kind of depressing beer there, Fremont Brewing. Thank you for that.
It's on the times.
Speaking of which, of lives that we would like but can't have right now, Seattle food-wise, we'll get to this in a little bit. I think of this as the Vegas edition of our Seattle food roundup.
Wait, how so?
We're going to be talking about a Momofuku-inspired burger.
That is true.
And we're going to be talking about milk bar style cookies.
Are they milk bar? I guess I've never had a cookie at milk bar, so I wasn't aware that that was the case.
I mean, I'm not going to say that they're explicitly milk bar inspired, but like milk bar is the first place that I've had a corn cookie. And right. We had and reviewed a corn cookie this week.
All right, we'll get to that first, but in a moment. But first, we celebrate this week the life of Congressman John Lewis, the civil rights leader and longtime representative from the state of Georgia, who died Friday at age 80. Also pouring this one out this week for unlimited hydroplane driver Scott Pierce, who drove Miss Budweiser to the 1991 High Points Championship. Pierce died Sunday in Kirkland from organ failure. And while we're on the topic of hydroplane races, the Tri-Cities Water Follies Board officially voted this week to cancel the 55th annual Columbia Cup. So no surprise there with the Franklin and Benton counties in the Tri-Cities area both still in a modified phase one of Washington's reopening plan. So.
They were postponed for so long and now finally canceled. Summer is officially over.
I mean, this would be the weekend of water follies, I think.
Wow. We would be previewing hydroplanes this week. Everybody's been waiting for that for a year.
I know. And you're just going to have to wait until 2021 unless we do the virtual hydroplane series that's going on right now.
Is that a thing?
That is a thing.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of like the virtual NASCAR thing they did.
Virtual NASCAR? Is it real NASCAR happening with fans?
Yes, but previous to that, virtual NASCAR was happening. Before they were spreading the virus.
Oh, man. Okay.
Right. Finding some slightly happier news this week. A toast to storm forward Alicia Clark, who is one of six players chosen for this year's Middle Tennessee State Athletics Hall of Fame class in her first year of eligibility. Clark played 2 years at MTSU after transferring from Belmont. She led the NCAA in scoring both seasons at 27.5 points and 28.3 points per game, both also school records, and was the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Year both seasons.
There we go. Very Tennessee from Alicia Clark.
Yes. And then also to Storm Associate Head Coach Noel Quinn, who will be part of the UCLA Athletics Hall of Fame class this year. So double Hall of Famers for the Storm. And then lastly, as part of this set of business, I think you wanted to share some thoughts about the tragic sudden passing of Michael Brooks.
Yeah, and something that happened so shockingly and unexpectedly today, seeing this news was devastating to see, and somebody was taken from us way too early. and such a great voice and, you know, progressive political commentary, and somebody who I'd gotten the chance to get to know over these last couple of years via booking his podcast. You know, I met Michael Brooks, as with so many other people, via the Count the Dings community. I met him at a Count the Dings show in Brooklyn, and we were talking backstage, and he was like, hey, you know, I also host a podcast. He was about to do Woke Bros with Big Waz. He's like, I do a podcast also, and I'm interested in doing some live shows. And I was kind of like, in that moment, like, okay, dude, we'll see. we're backstage at a live show, and I'm like, yeah, let's just talk later or whatever. And I was like, give me your email, like, let's figure it out. I knew nothing about him, you know, and it was something that I went into pretty skeptically. And over time, he became a really close friend of mine and somebody who I really appreciated talking to. I was having a conversation with him one time, and I was especially floored. He was just about to do merch for the Michael Brooks show. And before he was putting out merch, he went and toured the facility that I was going to be made in. And this was in San Francisco. Like, he lived in New York, and he flew across the country to go and make sure that the merch that he was going to be releasing under the Michael Brooks show name was being done so in fair and equitable fashion, and not being produced in a way with labor that wasn't being paid fair wages. And that, in that moment, when I had that conversation with him, I was like, damn, Michael Brooks is really living and breathing this lifestyle. You know, this isn't a put on. This isn't a persona that he's doing. He really believes the things that he's saying. And sometimes in political commentary, that's not true. So I was really impressed by that. I mean, I've worked with a number of artists and people who have not gone to anywhere near those same measures that he went to. And I thought that was a pretty cool moment. And he's somebody who, every time you talk to him, had such a warm perspective, positivity for what he was doing, and really was building up a scene. You know, I discovered him because of the Count the Dings community. And I have to give shouts to Jade and the community that he has put together around him. But I think even beyond that, Michael Brooks was somebody who connected me with a bunch of other folks within progressive politics that I previously wasn't connected with. And that's what he was all about, is continuing to connect folks within this progressive political scene. And it wasn't about him personally. It was just about the message that he was trying to get across more than anything else. And I think that was really the most incredible thing about him. And the other thing that I have to say that I'm really beating myself up about today, now that we've lost him, is every time that he would have a show coming up, he would say to me, like, are you going to come into this one? You know, his first was in New York, and then he was in LA, and over and over and over again, I had whatever reason not to go. And so I saw him at that show in Brooklyn with Big Waz doing Woke Bros, but I never once went and saw the community that he was building with the Michael Brooks show, which was an impressive community unto itself. And, you know, I told myself, once we get back out of quarantine, the next Michael Brooks show, the one in Austin or whatever, that's the one that I'm going to go to. And now, not having that opportunity, I'm looking back on it as, I really fucked up. And you have to take these opportunities while they're there and can't wait until the next one. You know, this is true with people that you know in your life. This is true with artists that you want to go see. We've talked about this before. You can't just wait. But this is also true with people in your life. You know, if you want to go and visit people or connect with people that you're friends with, you have one chance to go and do that. And that chance is right now, because tomorrow might not happen and you can't count on that. And that's something where, you know, like, I worked with Michael on a number of shows and I never was able to see them in person. And really, that's completely on me, because he invited me and wanted me to go to every single one of those, and I didn't do it. And that's something that I am going to have to personally reflect on and try to approach differently for the next situation like this, you know. And there'll never be anybody like Michael Brooks again. And really sad to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you see someone pass so young, it's a reminder of the importance of making the most of each day and the brief time that we have here. The other thing I think that stood out, I knew of Michael Brooks through the Count the Digs community, had obviously been following your relationship with him and the shows that, you know, you were helping put together and how successful they were. But I don't think I realized his impact until seeing the number of tributes that have poured in on Twitter after the announcement of his passing. He's been trending on Twitter. And I think the other thing that stands out to me is, we shouldn't wait to say those things about people until after they pass away and they can't hear them. We should make sure that, you know, if there's, you know, someone who is making your life a little bit better with the content they produce, reach out and let them know. I mean, I think that that's a really important thing to do.
Absolutely. Whew.
All right. Well, on that heavy note, should we transition to talking about Seattle food?
Sure.
So as you alluded to earlier, we mentioned this last week, You Need a Burger, our friends there had the pork bosom sandwich inspired by Momofuku and David Chang and the bosom that they serve in their restaurants. I don't know how long it's going to be on the menu or if it's still there this week for sure. I guess we could look at the online ordering, but it's closed for the night. So, but we definitely made sure to go get that last week while it was out there. What were your thoughts?
So this is not a permanent menu item.
I don't think so, but maybe it is.
I was under the impression that this was permanently going to be on the menu.
They didn't announce any limited time, so perhaps it is.
I thought it was great. You know, I was prepared going into this by you as saying you felt like the meat was good, but the accoutrement didn't really hit you. And when I had it, I was like, I mean, I agree that the meat is good, but also every single part of the sandwich is good. You know, we're talking, this is Momofuku inspired. And if there's one thing that I know about David Chang food, it is maximalism, right? Like
it
is flavor to the extreme. And that's what the sandwich is about. Nobody could ever accuse the sandwich of being bland.
That's very fair. Yeah, there was kind of a pickly quality to the kimchi.
I thought it was minty. That was the flavor that I got.
Yeah, there was a hint of mint for sure, too. And that just, to me, I wanted more of, to me, the best flavors on there are the pork itself and then the som sauce. And I would want those to be forward.
Now, was there som sauce on the sandwich itself?
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
Or at least their version of it.
Because that to me was the one thing that I felt like I needed more of. And I was desperately wishing that I had more of the squeeze bottle som sauce that I had from Costco from a couple of years ago. And I'm feeling like it's not quite as readily available as it was a couple of years back.
I went and looked for it a couple of months ago and I thought I was going to try to cook a bosom style pork shoulder at home. I didn't end up getting it, but I have one in the freezer that I'm going to cook at some point here. But we could not find it online anymore.
Oh, really? So it's not even available online, som sauce?
I mean, maybe it is secondhand, but not at like major retailers, at least.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I'm not shocked. Look, you know, when I saw it at Costco, I was like, oh, shit, this is crazy that this is at Costco, and I'm not expecting this to be here forever. So I'm not surprised that the sauce didn't sell all that well. The amount of people who are even familiar with David Chang and who are even interested in the sauce is still a relatively small group of people, but that to me was the only thing that I could have needed for this sandwich. Was there was the like the maximalism of the flavor and the richness, and I needed a little bit more of the spiciness on the other end.
Yeah, currently unavailable on Amazon from the link on the Momofuku website.
Wow.
You know, it is something we could try to make at home. I think we'd need to go to an Asian grocery, but it's definitely a possibility.
We can do that.
It could be done. It could be done. So also part of this trip up north last week, conveniently part of the trip because it was right on the way for me, on Instagram, the first weekend that WNBA players were in what they're calling the Wubble, I saw Brianna Stewart post on Instagram about getting cookies from Bell's Cookie Company, which was a place that I had not heard of, but it's located right down the street from where the Storm practiced on the SPU campus. So a natural tie there. And after going to the website, immediately determined that we needed to try it, although not as immediately as the famous Cousin Katie, who went out and ordered two boxes of 8 cookies apiece just for their family, her family.
That day. Katie pops into action when cookies are at stake here.
Yeah, she ended up getting them delivered before I went and got and picked them up. So clearly she was in a hurry.
Yeah, she doesn't know about... Wait, what did we determine the service was called? Not Kevin Hub.
Kevin Eats.
Kevin Eats. There we go. Yeah, she's not familiar with the Kevin Eats service.
Which I still think sounds like... Well, she is, because she had the Bosom sandwich from Kevin Eats. But she did not pay attention to that for the cookies, at least.
What were you going to say you think Kevin Eats sounds like?
It sounds like a Netflix show starring me, where I go around to different places eating Kevin Eats.
Yes, and? Is this a problem?
Well, it just could be confusing to people if there's multiple names.
Let's start the YouTube channel first.
Okay, that's actually not a bad idea.
Kevin Eats on YouTube?
Although it's also we're ripping off Waz Eats, as it turns out, now that I think about it.
You know what? I talked to him, and he's okay with it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Good. This is the Kevin Eats is inspired by Uber Eats.
Yes, I understand.
And this is under the PeltonCast channel on YouTube. No, I'm just describing a YouTube channel. PeltonCast channel on YouTube. Kevin Eats is one of the shows on there.
What are the other shows on there?
Me drinking on my porch and listening to Neil Young.
Alone in Charleston with Tristan.
Alone in Charleston. Even though I'll never be in Charleston, but the show is still called Alone in Charleston.
Yes, it is. It definitely
is. It's just me on my deck in the darkness, and it's called Alone in Charleston. I like it. We have to have a parent corner. We could have a parent corner. Or no, sorry. Not a parent corner. Coach's corner.
Yes.
Yes. And then, like, ten video game channels for my children. Because we got to get viewers to the channel.
That's our best chance.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So somebody needs to review Paper Mario.
Should we talk about the most important part of this decision, which was which cookies to get?
Absolutely, we should.
Okay, so chocolate chunk with mold on salt was a no-brainer.
Of course.
Anytime you can get a chocolate chunk, and anytime there's salt on the top, you're going to want to do that.
Yes, for
I
sure.
Red Velvet was our other consensus choice.
Correct.
And then you, as mentioned earlier, went with the Colombian corn. We're very excited about that.
I argued hard for the corn.
And I was outvoted on confetti, and my choice for this was the s'mores, which is a limited time selection from them.
Oh, shit. Limited time. You were outvoted on the confetti. I don't remember this going to vote.
Well, it didn't. I just brought it up, and you were not excited about it at all.
I mean, a confetti cookie is basically just a sugar cookie with sprinkles on it.
Yes, and?
Look, I'm not against that. I'm just saying I'd rather approach the more unique cookies here.
So I also had a fifth cookie from the famous Cousin Katie, part of her stash. She brought over
a secret cookie?
A secret cookie, the chocolate monster, which has pecans in it, so therefore you couldn't have it, but it was not eligible. So a few of these have pecans and were off the table.
Strike it from the record.
We also passed over the Snickerdoodle, the triple peanut butter chip and oat, the pantry, which was Katie's, maybe her favorite, right up there.
Pantry?
Yeah, that was white chocolate chips, toffee, and coffee flavor, the lemon blueberry and shortbread, and then the Bells, which is toffee, potato chip, chocolate chip, and pecan.
What is toffee? This is PeltonCast cooking for you.
I don't know if I can describe toffee. It's like, you know, the brittle cookie that you crack, not cookie, the brittle bar that you kind of break. I don't know.
Okay, let me just throw this out there. We passed over these cookies.
English, maybe?
... For now.
Oh, it's also like Werther's is toffee, isn't it? Is Werther's toffee?
No, there's no fucking way Werther's is toffee. That's a hard candy. Get out of here. The... We pass over those cookies.
There is a version of Werther's Toffee, apparently.
But it's not the Werther's that people know and love. We pass over these cookies for now. Because if you ask me, am I trying to get this Snickerdoodle cookie from Bell's Cookies? The answer is unequivocally yes.
Correct.
So I'm not willing to go out there and say that I'm never going to have any of these other flavors. These are just the initial first four that we had. And we might get four more next week. Or the next time that I happen to be passing through the lower Queen Anne area.
This is backside of Queen Anne, for the record. I don't think you would... Lower Queen Anne is a different place.
How would you describe this? We've actually thought about this before, or at least discussed this before. Because it's lower, and it's Queen Anne. What is the name of the neighborhood?
I think if you just say it's on Nickerson, that's probably the best way to do it.
South Queen Anne?
Would be North Queen Anne. It's on the north side of Queen Anne Hill. But this is some more Pumpkin Cast geography.
North Queen Anne. Okay. Lower North Queen Anne. Thank you. We've settled it.
A little NQN. Well done.
Rolls off the tongue.
Okay, what's our ranking of the cookies that we had?
Okay, are we starting with number one? Or are we starting with number
four? Yeah, let's start with number one.
To me, it was the chocolate chunk with salt.
Oh, it was outstanding. It was so gooey in the center. It was delicious. I think it probably exceeded the Hitchcock Deli cookie, which I'm not sure it's still available outside of Bainbridge Island at this point, since they closed the location in Georgetown.
Are you saying this is a contender for the best cookie in all of Seattle?
Of course it's a contender for the best cookie in all of Seattle.
Are you saying, in your opinion, as of this very moment, when we need to rank things, this is the best cookie in all of Seattle?
I would want to try it head-to-head, but it's definitely a consideration.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's a strong contender.
This cookie was... all the cookies were good. This one, I ate it 6 hours after you gave it to me, 8 hours after you gave it to me, and it was still gooey in the middle, but it held its shape. Like, that is an incredible feat for a cookie. And it's all you could be looking for in a cookie.
Okay, so what was my number two, actually, or my 1A, perhaps, was the Choco Monster, which was also equally gooey and delicious.
You're dead. It
had that caramel top on the puddle on the top of it that was outstanding. So that was my 1A or number two. All right, what was your number two?
My number two was the s'mores cookie. And, the spiritual cousin to this cookie would, of course, be the Hello Robin Mackle s'more. And I have to say, the s'mores cookie exceeded the Mackle s'more in every possible way.
Every possible way.
So the Mackle s'more is basically a cookie on top of a graham cracker. Whereas the s'mores cookie from Bell's Bakery, the graham cracker is part of the cookie itself. And that, to me, is the most important aspect of it. It is a soft part of it. Like, when you eat the Mackle s'more, you're like, all right, I'm just basically eating a cookie on top of a s'more.
For the record.
I'm not saying it's bad, but it's almost like you're taking two separate things and shoving them together. Whereas this cookie, it exceeded the sum of each of the parts.
Interesting.
You don't agree with this?
I don't disagree with this. I mean, I don't know if I agree that some of the parts are very good, so I don't know if I agree it exceeded the sum of the parts. I guess actually I'd put it that way. Maybe I like s'mores more than you do.
Okay, so what was your number two?
No, of the four cookies that we both ordered, that was my number two. I'm not disagreeing with you on the merits.
You sound like you're disagreeing with me.
I just find your description kind of odd.
Okay.
Because I like the graham cracker. I have no issue with that.
Okay.
Okay, so we're agreed on that. Number what did you have number three then?
Red Velvet number three.
I also had Red Velvet number three. I was a little disappointed. I thought it was going to be much higher. I thought it was going to be closer to the top two. But it wasn't as gooey.
I agree with all this. I don't know. I mean, I was excited to eat the Red Velvet cookie. I personally love Red Velvet cake. But in a cookie form, when you're the cream cheese aspect of it becomes white chocolate when we're talking cookies.
And there was a marshmallow on the top.
And a marshmallow. Like, I'm sorry, but cream cheese is incredible when you're having sweet things.
Cream cheese white is chocolate, key to the red velvet cake.
White chocolate and marshmallows are just fine. In fact, white chocolate is bad. So
I do not agree that white chocolate is bad, but it doesn't – like the beauty of the cream cheese and the red velvet is that it's like this very contrasting taste and texture to the rest of the cake. And there wasn't anything like that in here.
Yes. What red velvet to me is the number one cake. It's not the number one cookie. And so we had to try it. But if I were to go back, you know, I would try new things. And I would, if I were to repeat some of the cookies, this would not be one of them.
Agreed. And then you did not like the Colombian corn as much as it seems like you expect it to.
I really like the Milk Bar corn cookie. And it was one when, you know, you get the variety pack from Milk Bar, which apparently you don't know about.
I'm too busy getting the cake balls.
There's other good things at Milk Bar. And their cookies are some of those good things. So there's a corn cookie. The first time I ever had it was at Milk Bar. And I was like, wow, this is so much better than I anticipated it being. And I don't want to say that the Bell's one was bad because that's not the case. But it was basically like eating cornbread. It wasn't really – it was more like eating cornbread than it was like eating a cookie.
Right. Yeah, and that's not bad, but it's the cookie is not the appropriate cornbread delivery system. Ugh. Cornbread is.
I'm sure that without having had them, I would have preferred to have the confetti or the snickerdoodle, or I think there was like a blueberry lemon one in there.
Yes.
So I'm excited to try those as well.
Me too.
Okay, so we've ranked these individual cookies from Bell's Cookies. Now, let's rank Bell's Cookies in general. Is there a cookie in Seattle off the top of your head that you feel like is a legit competitor to Bell's Cookies for best cookie shop in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I think Hello Robin is definitely a competitor.
Can you describe the difference between the Bell's Cookie and the Hello Robin cookie?
Bell's Cookies are pretty big, some bigger than others. Hello Robin, they're more like snackable size cookies. And therefore, you're not getting the same level of gooiness. There's also not like a sea salt option in their chocolate chip. But I think I think that their catalog might be a little stronger top to bottom than Bell's is.
Interesting. I mean, you know, the relationship with Molly Moon's and having the opportunity to have cookie ice cream sandwiches, because there's almost no cookie that exceeds the quality of a cookie ice cream sandwich, right? But like, so that's an important factor. But the cookies under themselves, to me, and I love Hello Robin, these were better quality cookies in general than Hello Robin cookies.
I mean, I can't say you're wrong. We're going to need more research is the key here, though.
Are there other cookies that you would even discuss them? Is specialty still a thing?
No, specialty's closed. We poured some out earlier in the pandemic.
So I met specialties when... No. Specialty's cookies, I would say, were very good cookies when they were extremely fresh. I ate a Bell's cookie, like I said, like 8 hours after you gave it to me, and it was still incredible. It didn't need to be fresh out of the oven to still be good, and that's something that Specialty's cookies cannot say.
Also, Specialty's isn't Seattle specific, so I don't know if it technically counts as Seattle's best cookie.
So the whole chain is gone.
The whole old Specialty's cafe and bakery restaurants closed permanently in May.
Wow. Turns out having pretty shitty food and kind of above average cookies is not enough.
I mean, I think the other thing is, like, Specialty's had the crown during an era where Hello Robin didn't exist, where Bell's didn't exist. We're in a cookie renaissance.
Dark ages of cookies in Seattle.
But we got to bring back, I don't know.
We've got the Sopranos and the Breaking Bads of cookies going on right now.
Peak cookie. I did not find, my quick search did not find any indication that you can get the Hitchcock cookies without going to Bainbridge Island, and we would need them to be truly at peak cookie.
I mean, they would not even be, they're in fucking Bainbridge Island. Like, we'll stretch best item in Seattle pretty far outside of Seattle boundaries.
That's what I'm
saying.
Bainbridge
Island is not close enough. You cannot take a ferry there, although Vashon would count.
Well, you...
So wait, I take that back.
You can take a ferry there.
You just can't take a ferry to Bain. Is that not true? Like, the best cookies
I
yet were on
I
Vashon.
Said...
You would go to Vashon for those cookies and take a ferry there. You just can't take the Bainbridge ferry.
This is a very strange place to draw the line, I must say. It's just to be able to say the third Pelton brother races from Seattle, I guess. I don't know.
Is it Vashon part of Seattle, or is it a separate city?
I think it's its own community. I don't think it's part of Seattle.
Look, Vashon is part of Seattle when it comes to... If the best teriyaki in Seattle...
You know,
Seattle
Bainbridge is not that far from Vashon.
Fuck Bainbridge. Like, you're out here all the time talking about how great Bainbridge is.
I assume I've been to Bainbridge.
Vashon vis-a-vis Bainbridge. As far are they on the same peninsula?
They're
opposite directions. Tell me
islands. They're not opposite directions. Bainbridge is like north of Vashon. Northwest of Vashon.
Vashon is east and Bainbridge is west.
It's not gonna dignify this with a response at some point here.
Anyway. Bainbridge is too far. Vashon is close enough to be considered Seattle's best teriyaki chicken burger sandwich cookie, whatever. Bainbridge is too far to travel for a cookie.
What I was saying again is that if we brought it back to Seattle proper, that's what would be required to be peak cookie.
We would have to go to Bainbridge and then take it back on the ferry and then eat it? What are you trying to say?
They'd have to reopen a location in Seattle because they previously had a location in Seattle.
Okay.
And back when we were searching for Seattle's best sandwich, and they closed down in the middle of that after I had placed my order online.
I forgot.
I'm
did
sorry,
you
before
get refunded
I,
for that?
I don't know if I did. I don't know
Hitchcock
if I got charged
Deli,
for it.
You owe Kevin Pelton $60.
I definitely.
It was like a pretty expensive order, wasn't it?
I guess there might have been a couple of sandwiches in there for the both of us.
You're dead. Now we're fucking never going to Bainbridge.
Well, maybe we'll have to go to Bainbridge to get our money back.
Yeah, that's the only way you can get it. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Wow. Hitchcock Deli closed like the day that we were going to consider it for Seattle's best sandwich.
I think it had already been closed. They just had not pulled down their online order. But there was like some place you could get the sandwich in downtown. Okay, Cafe Hitchcock is located in the Historic Exchange Building in downtown Seattle. So therefore, the question we have is this place
do
still
you
open?
Do you have to take a ferry to get there?
No, you do not have to take a ferry to get here. Is the cookie on their menu?
At Cafe Hitchcock. So this is still affiliated with Hitchcock Deli.
Correct. But I'm not seeing the cookie on here.
I'm sure. I know it's weird, but I'm a hedgehog, and that's Tails.
And he says, "Fuck Bainbridge."
That's fuck Bainbridge.
Oh no! Oh,
please no. Keep that in the podcast.
Yeah, I'll keep the memories of it.
Keep the memories of it. Tay, why are you down here?
Because I got scared upstairs.
Of what?
Of monsters coming up, because monsters like the dark.
Do they?
Yeah.
Aren't you Sonic the Hedgehog? Shouldn't you be okay with monsters?
Yeah, because I'm a superhero. Yeah. I'm only not afraid of the monsters' knights.
But then, if you're not afraid of the monsters, why are you down here with me?
Well, the knights are just the statues for the monsters.
So you're afraid of the monsters, but you're not afraid of the knights.
Yeah, the knights are just statues. Yeah, there's just statues.
What? Where's your mom? And also, what are your feelings about Bainbridge?
Weird.
What about Vashon?
What do you think about Vashon? Is Vashon part of Seattle?
Yeah, he's part of the monsters, but not the monsters' statues.
Vashon is a he?
Yeah, I'm not. It matters.
I love to. You come grab Tay.
It's in GTA 5.
Okay, we seem to have resolved the monster situation.
Monsters are afraid of popsicles, so it's very fortunate. But bad news for Bainbridge.
So the monsters don't like recording stuff because they're actually afraid of monsters and they just want them to hide.
Oh god, another child is coming down here. Can we?
Are you guys on a podcast? Am I actually in this? Oh, hello.
Hello, hi. Baby fantasy genius.
He's gone.
Did you take his brother with him?
She wanted to bring Tay to your room. Wait, Luca, come here. What's the mascot for Middle Tennessee State?
Isn't it the Blue Raiders?
Okay, he still remembers something. What's Belmont? Doesn't remember Belmont anymore. I don't know. I don't really remember Belmont. Are they Tigers?
Bruins.
The Belmont Bruins.
Okay, so it turns out Cafe Hitchcock does not have cookies. I don't know if I got that in. But anything else to say on cookies?
Okay, that's good news. Well, that's not good news. That's bad news because I want cookies. But that's good intel. I don't want to do an official search for Seattle's best cookie in this moment. But I'm excited to continue trying the rest of the menu at Bell's Cookies because I think they're the bell holder as of this moment.
The bell holder?
Wow.
It was just sitting there.
Not for anybody else. And I'm also, I just like to try cookies. So.
I mean, I think the other thing I'd say is if the listener has a favorite cookie that we haven't mentioned, we've only mentioned three or maybe four if you care specialties. Then let us know, and we'll be sure to check that out. So we are not doing our search for Seattle's best teriyaki this week. Did not get a chance to get to a location, but we are going to make up for it by next week reviewing two locations.
Well, and I also want to shout out the listener out there making their own teriyaki. And if anybody independently is making their own Seattle-style teriyaki, please let us know, because we are excited to see that.
Yeah, and see how your presentation puts ours to shame.
You can't put ours to shame if we're not making our own.
I did make my own.
I know, but if you don't make your own, you can't put ours to shame.
Oh, I guess that's true, yeah. We also are postponing this week the top five songs of 2020 so far, which presumably will happen
it's like Tenant.
than Water Follies.
You can find it in theaters in 2021.
Oh, no. Oh, no. So let's turn to sports and start with our NBA Seattle update, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza.
Because Pagliacci is having a successful bubble, and so are we.
So the NBA, not so bad. No positive tests since players cleared quarantine. They had a couple of players test positive upon arrival, one of whom we know was Michael Beasley, who went home and was substituted by the Brooklyn Nets, so he won't be participating, sadly, in the restart of the NBA season. But we are days away, Wednesday morning Pacific time. We are going to have, or I guess at noon, because it's technically in the afternoon. On Wednesday, we are going to have NBA scrimmages. I got wow. Flustered.
Okay, because you have to start working again. You got flustered.
I'm all thrown off. I've been waking up earlier for no particular reason.
This is like the week before school when you would start waking up at the time that you'd have to go to school, and I would still sleep until 10, and I'd be pissed at you. That's what's going on right now.
That's about right. I'm unhappy that I'm waking up early. I would rather be sleeping. I don't know about till 10.
You're having NBA basketball nightmares.
Because if you wanna go outside before it's like 75 these couple of days, it's gonna need to be before 10 a.m.
Oh, this is the time of year in Seattle when it's actually sunny.
It sure is. It sure is.
Okay, so we're going to have NBA scrimmages starting today, Wednesday. As you're hearing this podcast.
No, no,
okay,
tomorrow.
It's not tomorrow, Tuesday. Sorry. Yes, okay. Tomorrow, as you're hearing this podcast.
Podcast. Days of the week.
Days of the week.
We've been recording on Tuesday pretty consistently.
Normally
so
record
I can see
on
why
Tuesday.
You were throwing off.
Wow. Are these scrimmage games going to be televised?
I believe that all 33 will be televised either on League Pass or nationally.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know if we've got full details on that yet, which you would think we would because they're starting on Wednesday.
Have there been any other basketball updates? I mean, aside from Michael Beasley going home, I've seen that Victor Oladipo is now looking like he's going to be playing for the Pacers.
Yeah,
aside from that,
said he expects he will play. I mean, there's been some additional reporting about players arriving, players that are at home because of the fact that they tested positive for COVID-19, but nothing earth-shattering as yet. So it looks like 2 games a day will be on NBA TV at least during the scrimmages, and on Sunday, 4 games on NBA TV.
Great.
Pretty much.
Who doesn't love some mid-season NBA preseason?
Look, it's our first live NBA basketball in over 4 months. We'll take whatever we can
I
get.
I promise
at this point
to care about it precisely as much as I care about the actual NBA preseason.
That's fair. Currently wrapping up their whatever you want to call the preseason inter-squad games that they're playing, since sadly that's not a crosstown rival like the New York and Chicago teams have been able to play each other. The Mariners preparing for opening day coming up this week. We are days away from Mariners baseball.
Baseball is coming! I would say that we're also T-minus 1 week away from Mariners hot takes returning every single week on the Pelton Cast.
Are you guaranteeing hot takes throughout the entire 2020 season?
Look, the entire 2020 season is only in 60 games. Can we not keep it up for the entire season? Every game matters of this Mariners season. If they start out 4-3, they're in playoff contention, baby.
I would like you to have a take on the fact that the Mariners are going with a permanent 6-man rotation this season.
That actually, is that true?
As I understand it, it is. Yes.
That literally does not make sense to me. If you have a shortened season, why wouldn't you have a 4-man rotation?
I think they don't want to overtax pitchers' arms. And there won't be as many off days. But I don't know if that necessarily necessitates a 6-man rotation.
Okay, here's your hot take. Here's your hot take, Mariners 2020. Stats are out, baby! We're going 6 starting pitchers!
Well, it turns out, unfortunately, the statistical projections are in for the 2020 season.
No.
And they are not favorable for your Seattle Mariners.
Look, you cannot predict this baseball season. I'm sorry, but this has to be the most unpredictable baseball season ever.
You can still attempt to project it. And FanGraphs has projected a 24-36 record for the Mariners last in the AL West and a 1.1% chance to make the playoffs. Not to be outdone, Baseball Prospectus' Pecota projections have the Mariners at 24-36 with a 0.1% chance to make the playoffs.
This is bullshit. This team is making the playoffs, and I'll tell you what. There is nothing more Mariners than sneaking into the playoffs in a pandemic-shortened season and losing in a one-game playoffs.
The last time there was a shortened season, they did make the playoffs. Unfortunately, it was 1995, but it's been a while.
Almost yesterday. I'm just telling you, if there was one way for the Mariners to break the streak, this is the year. To sneak in and break the streak by playing in one of the play-in playoff games. You can't tell me that's not the most Mariners thing to happen.
It's a pretty Mariners thing to happen.
Not making the playoffs is actually the most Mariners thing to happen.
It really is. So a team that is moving on to the knockout tournament portion of the MLS's back tournament is Seattle Sounders FC, who got a 3-0 win to clinch a advancement over the Vancouver Whitecaps on Sunday night. You watched this match, right?
I watched every single second of this match.
There you
in fact.
Go. And you know what else happened every single second of this match?
What?
The Sounders dominated pretty much every single second of this match.
You know, you described on the podcast last week the Whitecaps as pretty decimated as far as a team goes, with both injuries and players choosing not to play in the MLS's back tournament. And that appeared to be true.
It did all check out.
Saw on the field, the two teams did not look. I want to really caution, and I don't know if the broadcasters for this match were doing so, but I would like to really caution how much to take away from this, because this was clearly a weakened Vancouver Whitecaps team.
Now, we say this, they actually were competitive in their first match in Group B. I believe they were leading that one 3-1 before giving up that lead, giving up 3 goals, and losing to San Jose 4-3, who the Sounders drew in their opening match. Although they were really dominant in terms of expected goals in that one. They were very lucky to only lose 4-3, I guess. Similarly dominated, the Sounders had 3.1 shot-based expected goals to 0.8 for Vancouver, which that even that feels a little bit generous. They were also slightly even shorthanded compared to that first match because, unfortunately, goalkeeper Brian Meredith, the former Sounders backup, had his mother pass away and left the team. And then the backup goalkeeper was injured in the 58th minute, I believe, in the second half of this one. And Vancouver had a player make his first team debut in goal for the last 30 minutes of this one and kept a clean sheet in that period.
Didn't give up a goal, so.
Although the Sounders kind of shifted into time-wasting mode at some point during the second half of this one.
Yeah, that was actually kind of the incredible part of it, was this was the first sporting event, live sporting event, that I've watched since early March, and I was bored for about at least half of it. There was a moment where I was like, yeah, okay, I can get back into live sports, and then watching live sports again, I was like, oh, okay, well,
it was a good run.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the stakes here, this is an MLS, this is a World Cup style tournament, and they dominated. The next round is going to be thrilling all 90 minutes.
You would think so. So who might the Sounders play in the next round? We will not know until Thursday, because that's dependent on a couple of factors. First off, where they finish in Group B remains TBD, because the postponement of the initial matches in this group due to FC Dallas pulling out and then Nashville later pulling out. So Chicago and Vancouver will not play the last match of Group B until Thursday. Currently, the Sounders are second, 1 point ahead of Chicago, but you would expect Chicago has a pretty good chance of beating Vancouver in the finale here. 538 gives the Sounders a 34% chance of finishing second in their group and a 66% chance of finishing third. Now, the important thing here is it might not be such a bad thing to finish third, because the
really?
Second place finisher, the runner-up in Group B, finishes the runner-up in Group F, where currently LAFC,
wow,
the best team in MLS, coming off of a dominant win over...
Best team in MLS?
I think they are comfortably the best team in MLS, even though the Sounders beat them on the day in the Western Conference Finals. They are coming off a 6-2 thrashing of the LA Galaxy in their most recent match, but they are coming to this 2 points behind the Portland Timbers, their opponent in the final match in Group F. So if the Timbers can scratch out a draw or win that match, they would finish first and LAFC would be second, and potentially the opponent again if the Sounders finish second in Group B.
Interesting.
So LAFC is still the favorite to win that group. They should beat Portland. 538 Soccer Power Index gives them a 60% chance of finishing first, a 40% chance, of course, of finishing second. So if the Sounders were to finish third, then it depends on the ranking of the third-place teams. They definitely would qualify out of that, but It kind of depends on which other teams do, whether they would face the winners of Group D or the winners of Group C. Those both also still be determined. But it does mean a pretty good possibility that they could end up facing Toronto FC in the opening knockout game in a rematch of last year's MLS Cup.
The hated Toronto FC.
Yeah, the favorites to win Group C.
Let me ask you a question about this. Well, I guess first off, on the pitch, Jordan Morris looked incredible.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. Jordan Morris was awesome. Like, drew the penalty that led to the first goal with Nico Ladero scoring from the spot, scored the second goal, made several other dangerous runs. He's in fine form.
The counterattack that Rui Diaz and Jordan Morris had together was, considering that we're playing post-quarantine soccer, one of the prettiest bits of soccer I've seen in a long time.
I mean, and very different from the first few matches for the Sounders. Also, a shocking number of back-heel passes from Rui Diaz.
That was incredible. No, it was like, wow. I mean, for a second, we were watching the beautiful game.
So, they were really playing soccer out there.
That was quite a run. Okay, so let me ask you a question here, though, about the presentation. Where do you stand on piped-in crowd noise?
I'm neutral, slightly leaning against. Like, it was... It was definitely, I think it was stronger on the FS1 broadcast. I'm not sure if ESPN is piping in any.
I heard that ESPN was not.
Yeah, because what was really noticeable, particularly in that second match, is like you could hear everything that Schmetz and the other manager were yelling, which was wild. I didn't really process it watching that Sunday match on FS1 until the Sounders team Twitter account tweeted out the highlight of the Lodero PK, which I watched because I had been up in the kitchen during that. Had heard that he scored, but didn't actually see it. And then watched that, and it was like, oh, it's really quiet on this replay. Oh, right. There's no one there.
I'm highly pro.
Really?
I mean, it feels like there's real stakes involved. You know, like, we've all watched road games of sports teams, and you know what it sounds like, right? And that's what it sounds like, is there's a murmur. But when it's totally quiet, you feel like you're watching, and look, maybe this is a terrible take or whatever, you still feel like you're watching kind of like an amateur sporting event. You feel like you're watching preseason or summer basketball or something when there's no noise whatsoever.
Some of us watch a lot of summer basketball. Maybe that's why I'm at home with it.
But I'm curious during the NBA what they're going to do, you know, knowing that ESPN has chosen not to do this for soccer and questioning whether they're going to continue that for the NBA.
I think the big difference is the NBA, by all accounts, will probably pipe in music to come.
Interesting.
Does not make as much sense in an outdoors giant stadium.
You just need something to keep the energy up, though. To make it feel like if it is totally quiet, and granted, we've all played basketball where there's nothing happening, but at the same time, even when you're playing pickup basketball, if somebody has a boombox or whatever and is playing music, it's a lot better than when there's nothing at all.
Agreed.
So you need some sort of ambient noise, and I think that's really what the piped-in crowd noise does when you're viewing it is, it's just like, okay, you feel like there's real stakes here. And that's what I felt watching the soccer match yesterday.
We'll get to the WNBA in a second here, but my friends at 3 Point Productions are doing the WNBA game presentation in the bubble.
Are they piping in crowd noise?
I don't know whether they are or not. I mean, I don't think any place is like actually piping it into the game.
Yeah, sure.
Into the arena. Okay, OL Reign saw their tournament, NWSL Challenge Cup competition, come to an end on Saturday night, eliminated 4-3 on
live
PKs by
bad.
The Chicago Red Stars in the quarterfinals.
Look, when you can just do a rewatch of Seahawks games and you don't have to watch any live sports, the Seahawks win every game. Except for...
we definitely rewatched a tie. So they did not win that game. We 100% rewatched a tie.
They didn't lose.
Not live.
We rewatched a tie. Oh, you're sick people.
Shout out third Felton brother Zach Whitman.
Oh, man.
The scoreless match went directly to PKs after stoppage time. It was the third of four quarterfinals to reach PKs without a goal, but no shortage of highlights. Definitely some good chances for both teams. Jody Taylor created a lot of opportunities for Rain FC in the first half. Kealia Watt probably had the best chance for either team with a point-blank chance for Chicago in the second half that went wide. And the best Rain FC chance after halftime was a header on frame from Darian Jenkins in the 85th minute that rebounded out through the box but did not find the foot of any Rain players. It was one of seven saves by USWNT keeper Alyssa Nair for Chicago. Shirley Cruz missed the opening PK for the Rain over the crossbar, putting them behind. And Lauren Barnes missed off the post and out to end the shootout.
When you have to think that the loss of Megan Rapinoe on this tournament, both, you know, on the pitch for the initial 90 and then for these penalty kicks is a huge loss for them, losing who's maybe the best player in the entire league.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at some of the analysis of the NWSL Challenge Cup, the big thing that's really missing is the quality of the strikers, with so many of the USWNT stars and some other international strikers not participating in this.
Are players exactly like Julie Ertz playing?
Julie Ertz is playing. She played for Chicago against the Rain, but she's probably the most prominent national team player who's participating, I think. I might be missing someone. So, no plans to continue the 2020 NWSL season, so this is it for the Rain. Coach Fareed Benstidi said post-game that he had hoped to take the team to France to train during the run-up to the European season, but that is no longer possible because of the travel ban on people coming from the U.S.
It's not them, it's us.
Oh, it's always us. In happier
Don't try months. To take them to Mexico or the Bahamas or Canada either.
Or Hawaii.
Anywhere out of this country. The contiguous U.S. Oh, God.
Maybe Alaska. I guess you could go to Alaska, hypothetically, just to get Cruz there. In happier news, the NWSL is set to announce an L.A. expansion team on Tuesday, per Grant Wall. The ownership group, according to Wall, will include former USWNT stars headlined by Mia Hamm, as well as several prominent celebrities, including Eva Longoria, Natalie Portman, and Serena Williams.
There we go. Is there currently not an LA NWSL team?
There is not currently. So this is big news for them to get into the nation's number two market and riding some momentum, I would say.
There we go. I was going to say I'm shocked by this, but I don't know if you heard this, but in the football, they didn't have a team in LA for...
I don't know if you've heard this.
Quite a long time.
They don't have a team in Seattle.
They have plenty of teams in LA in basketball.
Yeah, no shortage of those. They're good up, all good on those. All right, also tipping off this weekend is the 2020 WNBA season from Bradenton, Florida. A reminder, first off, we tweeted about this. I guess it's not a reminder if you aren't following us on Twitter, to join the WNBA Fantasy League that the listener Noah put together. I'm participating, so hopefully we get enough people to get this going by this weekend. Should be a lot of fun. You can find that link either in the show notes or on Twitter, or it's on sports.ws under PeltonCast Fantasy League with the password. Slick Watts, all one word, lowercase. Slick Watts. So the Storm, as we've talked about last week, will be opening up against the New York Liberty and will pretty clearly be doing so as favorites to win the WNBA championship.
Wow. There we go.
Elena Diladon isn't officially out for the season after her medical exemption was denied, but it seems very unlikely that she will be playing.
She's going to be playing?
It seems very unlikely she's going to be playing.
Oh, unlikely she'll be playing. I saw some of the circumstances around this, and it was shocking to not have her medical exemption accepted.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know that I want to tell an independent panel of doctors what puts a player at higher risk, but it was something I think that we all expected to come through. Now, eventually it's not actually making a difference because the Mystics will continue to pay her salary, and she doesn't have to participate. She can continue to opt out. So, you know, it's it's an unsatisfying conclusion, but it's not necessarily a difference in terms of the actual outcome for her.
Okay.
But without her in the lineup for the defending champion, Mercury, or Mystics, I should say, with so many other stars City out this season, Storm pretty clearly the favorites. I've got some statistical WNBA projections.
There we go.
Later this week on ESPN.com.
On ESPN, they're letting you do WNBA stats, huh?
They sure are.
Wow. I was going to say exclusive to the Pelton cast, but no, apparently not.
No, this is big time. This is legit.
This podcast is not legit. Don't make me talk about Bainbridge again.
You know what I usually distinguish as a legit podcast is when a 3-year-old wanders on and starts talking, starts cursing during the middle of it. That's usually an indicator of legitimate podcast. It is funny because it's real.
Oh my god. Look, I listened to J.J. Redick and Win Butler, and I slandered Bainbridge apparently way less than Win Butler slandered Oklahoma City and St. Louis and Orlando and any third-tier American city. So
that is fair, but again, none of Win Butler's children came under my radar.
Okay.
So also, I don't know if I'm going to write about this, but an interesting stat I uncovered over the weekend. One of the big
talking it's like you're Indiana Jones of these stats. You uncovered the stat.
I chiseled out. I swept the bone off. I uncovered the stat.
Underneath, there was a WNBA stat. Okay, so
it was well preserved, the stat from 2018.
What was the stat that you uncovered?
There was a lot of excitement at Media Day and throughout the Storm's media availability of the last week about getting the band back together when Natasha Howard practiced for the first time, and it was the first time that 2018 championship starting lineup had played for the Storm and taken the court since the end of the 2018 finals, because Brianna Stewart got injured last April and then Sue Bird never participated in the season and underwent knee surgery. And that lineup that they had is their starting lineup then. It will continue to be their starting lineup. Coach Gary Kloppenberg has made clear Sue Bird, Jewel Lloyd, Alicia Clark, Brianna Stewart, Natasha Howard had the best raw plus minus of any lineup in a single season in WNBA history.
Wow. There you go. So the stats that you uncover don't factor in aging.
Oh, wow. Is this about Sue? I won the bet, right? Should I play the audio? She's going to be in the lineup on Saturday. We'll see. Okay, next week, when she has actually played, I will replay the audio of our argument last year about how her career was over. Look, not even a pandemic could stop Sue from getting back on the court.
Star point guard at how many years old? 42 years old? 41 years old?
She's not that old. She's 39.
Okay, 30. I honestly thought she was that. That wasn't an insult. So a star point guard at 39 years old, and then former MVP coming off an entire missed season. But, let's just trust stats from before those things happen. Cool. Let's uncover those.
So you think your take is the Storm is not going to be good?
No, I'm sure that they will be.
you're taking the under here?
What is the over-under?
I don't
know. Any time that I've been given an over-under, now I want to take this seriously. I'm like, wait a second, there's over-unders to take?
Let me see if I can find this. I had something else to say, but now I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, other stats that you uncovered?
I mean, one of the interesting things is they were basically even with those players not on the court in 2018. And another talking point has been they think that this year's bench could be even better than that year's bench, which I think is quite possible.
Yeah, that's the part that we're not factoring in is Jordan Canada has a season under her belt of basically being a starting point guard and now is being moved to the bench.
And also Mercedes Russell, who was, a little used third center, started last year in place of Brianna Stewart, and she's also moved back to the bench. So, and then they added Morgan Tuck and Epiphany Prince this off season. So
I was going to bring up all these. Morgan Tuck and Epiphany Prince.
I knew you were going to. I'm not seeing this on the Caesars website.
Oh! Are there things to gamble on?
Well, you can gamble on the NBA. Among other things, yes.
Ugh. You have to check out what's it called? You know, the good sports book.
I think there are probably some not as legitimate sites that have.
No, you know the one that I'm talking about, the one that's like slightly off strip down to the without knowing direction, I want to call it Southeast.
The Westgate.
Yeah, Westgate. That's the one that's going to have WNBA.
Did not come up on Google. The very reputable sportsbettingdime.com says 14.5, which is almost exactly what their projection is.
Out of how many games?
22.
14.5? I feel like it's an over on that.
I think I'd go slight over on that one, yeah.
Okay. Well, so no, I don't disagree with you.
Well, there. We've settled that then. Good.
Done.
UW Sports men's basketball friend Brian Penn Johnson announced on Instagram that he's transferring to LSU. He had said a couple weeks ago that he was going to leave the UW men's basketball program. General Athletic Department note, they announced one positive COVID-19 test among the 30 athletes returning to campus last week. That brings the total to 4 out of 187 athletes tested upon their return to campus, which certainly good news compared to many colleges across the country.
Pretty fascinating for Brian Penn Johnson to transfer to LSU of all places.
Yeah, one of the things I saw is that maybe he's excited about. There was another Pac-12 to LSU transfer recently, Cavill Bigby Williams from Oregon, who thrived out at LSU, and apparently they were one of the finalists for his services when he was being recruited out of high school.
I mean, I don't think a college basketball season is going to happen on time this year, but I'm assuming that when it does happen, he'll get a waiver to be able to play immediately.
Most people probably will, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Probably easier if you're transferring home. He's actually transferring farther away from home. So that's a tougher argument. On the UW football front, Kennedy Catholic wide receiver Junior Alexander committed to ASU, which breaks up the combination with UW-bound QB Sam Heward and his fellow wide receiver Jabez Tine, who committed a couple weeks ago to UW.
As well as Savelle Smalls from the pipeline at Kennedy.
Yeah, not as much of a pipeline anymore.
Wow!
The Huskies did land a commitment, and you'll be excited about this.
There we go.
4-star offensive lineman Owen Prentice from O'Day High School. You love an offensive lineman recruit.
I'll tell you what. You give me any offense, 4-star offensive lineman recruit over any wide receiver recruit, and that gets me excited.
It's good to know what you like.
I mean, it's true. Like, look, a 4-star offensive lineman is a lot harder to find than a 3-star, 4-star wide receiver. But I definitely do like continuing the Kennedy pipeline to UW for these games that will not happen this year.
It might happen in the spring. So games that are somewhat more likely to happen in the NFL. Tuesday was scheduled to be the reporting date for Seahawks rookies and rookies across the league, aside from the two games who were scheduled, teams that were scheduled to participate in the Hall of Fame game. But that's expected to be delayed.
Delayed? Is this like the boat races?
Not the reporting date.
Oh, okay. They'll play the Hall of Fame game in October.
week 15, yeah. Is the league and NFLPA finalized testing and other protocols for the 2020 season? The latest report on Monday from ESPN's Adam Schefter indicated the NFL has offered the NFLPA to cancel the entirety of the preseason, as the Players Association had requested.
Definitely makes sense. I mean, you know, we'll see longer term if this is a bit of a trend. My hunch is that a 4-game preseason will never return. At the same time, I'm just, you know, we saw a lot of NFL athletes come out recently within the last couple of days and talk about how they want to play, but that they were looking for protocols, for testing and containment and what would happen if there are positives. And I personally, and obviously the players still, you know, these are stopgap measures that seem like they've been put in place, but it does not feel like there has been any sort of comprehensive response to what is going to happen here. And if you do have players that are still able to go out in the community, different from the bubble situation that we're seeing in the NBA and in MLS and the WNBA, if you have players that are still able and eligible to go out into their communities, you're going to have throughout the 32 NFL teams players contracting coronavirus and spreading it to their teammates.
I mean, I think, you know, the what this is going to require is a lot of individual responsibility, much as the way that we've reopened throughout the country has required of us.
Yeah, and it's gone great so far.
It has.
Tell me what the country's reopening so far has told you about individual responsibility. I mean, this is the thing, though, is like, yes, maybe it is going to. And if we're being honest, out of the how many players play in the NFL? 2,500, 3,000 players?
I mean, including training camp, it's like, yeah, about 2,100.
You can have a lot of players taking individual responsibility.
It's 2,700.
Yeah, I was going to say 2,100. I feel like enough. You can have a lot of players taking individual responsibility, and if there are a couple that don't, it doesn't really matter what those other players do. And that, to me, is the biggest issue here, which is it's kind of an all-or-nothing thing. Where, like, yes, you can take an individual responsibility. I do not think if you have players in their hometowns, you can blanket say that every single NFL athlete is going to be safe in every single situation. It's just, it's impossible to do, right?
Like, is they're living their daily lives?
Absolutely, yes. Like,
no, I don't think, like,
look, you think you can have every single NFL athlete not put themselves into situations where they could be exposed to
No. I guess I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you were basically making the, like, you could get it going to the grocery store argument, which is pretty debunked at this point. That's not what I'm saying.
I'm saying that there
of those 90 players, a couple of guys are going to go to, you know, a bar.
Yeah, that's the reality here. Like, and if you have 88 players on a team who are taking the correct personal responsibility and not going anywhere at all or whatever, taking correct safety protocols, but there are two that do, the second that they go to practice, every single other player is at risk. And that, to me, because they can transmit it pre-symptomatic.
Yeah, I mean, they will be tested every day for the first couple of weeks.
I'm not sure if that matters.
It's helpful. It's not a panacea. The other thing is they'll be limiting, like, players are not going to be mingling together off the field in the same way you would. And so, I mean, I think, you know, it remains to be seen how much the actual act of playing football or a football practice creates a risk of transmission. We don't really have a lot of evidence for that.
I'm going to go ahead and say, from what I know about transmission, if they're not wearing masks while playing football, the answer is a lot.
I mean, I think you create risk amongst, like, if it's a wide receiver against a cornerback and you're matching up head-to-head on a regular basis, or offensive lineman, defensive lineman, yes. I don't think that, like, one player is going to infect everyone else on the team.
It's offensive lineman, defensive lineman into a huddle with everybody else. Like, this is a sport that requires a lot of heavy breathing, a lot of yelling, and a lot of close contact between the players. More so than basically any other sport that we play.
Yeah.
I don't know.
At least that we're playing outside of a bubble.
Yes. They were playing, and that to me is like...
Because it is different from baseball and even soccer, which USL is playing outside of a bubble currently. Which is shocking information. And apparently they were trying to have fans at games. I don't know if they've had fans at games yet.
Wow. Jeez. But I do think that football is the sport that is going to expose players the most of any professional sports.
Wait, there was... Oh, no, that's 2019. That threw me off.
So we'll see. And then as far as players at games go, I think we saw a message today from both the Giants and the Jets that they were not going to have fans at games for the 2020 season, which to me means no team is having fans.
It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Sure, yes. But A, New York is not the worst of places with regards to coronavirus. In some ways, it's one of the best of places.
No, but there's also, you know, how good you're doing with cases does not correlate with how severe you are. It probably negatively correlates with it. The Indianapolis Indy 11 team played at Lucas Oil Stadium on Saturday with fans.
With social distancing measures in place, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a 60,000 seat stadium, and I think the attendance was less than 5,000, so. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That likely included the actual number of spectators appeared significantly less than the announced
4,700. You even imagine this is for a USL match?
Yeah.
If you're willing to go risk your life to go watch the USL live, like,
well, people have done it for not much better reasons.
A toasty user, but I think we should anticipate that this NFL season will not have fans in any of these NFL stadiums.
I can't tell if that's optimistic or pessimistic.
It's not optimistic. It's optimistic to say that it'll happen.
That the NFL will be that responsible.
I'm telling you that if nobody in the two major markets can be in the stadiums, they're not going to be anywhere else. Like, just there's no way the 32 owners are going to be like, well, the Cardinals can have fans, but we can't. Like, that will never be agreed upon.
If they share that revenue, I don't think it's totally unrealistic. I think money outweighs competitive balance at the end of the day.
Let me just tell you, money outweighs all things, including human life, in this particular pandemic. So I suppose I can agree with that.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Oh, thanks.